I'm calling the meeting to order today for the November 20th, 2019 meeting of the Commission to End Homelessness. We will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, which will be led by Sheriff Don Barnes. Please rise.
Please place your hand over your heart. If you are a veteran, you've earned the right to salute. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Sheriff Barnes. The agenda for today contains a brief general description of each item to be considered. Except as provided by law, no action shall be taken on any item not appearing on the agenda. The Commission encourages public participation. If you wish to speak on any item appearing on the agenda or during public comments, please complete a speaker request form and turn it in to our clerk prior to the reading of the item. Each speaker will be given 3 minutes to speak. The clerk will run the timer and announce when your time is up. Madam Clerk, please take roll call.
Thank you. Please respond here when I state your name. Commissioners Andrew Doe.
Here.
Michelle Steele. Ken Domer.
Here.
Scott Stiles.
Here.
Paul Wyatt.
Here.
Sue Parks. Tom Casella.
Here.
Randy Black. Richard Afable. Jim Palmer.
Here.
Dan Young. Jack Twan.
Here.
Don Barnes.
Here.
Scott Larson. Marshall Moncrief.
Here.
Teresa Smith. Teresa Murphy.
Here.
Matt Bates.
Here.
Jean Aubrey. Thank you. We have a quorum.
Thank you. Before I ask our executive director for an update, I'm very happy to announce that the Board of Supervisors yesterday approved moving ahead with the Yale Street Transitional Center. This is the new homeless shelter to replace the courtyard, which was a repurposed bus terminal, facility with adequate space for housing, but also for services, with an FQHC capacity on site. So that way we don't have to keep calling the fire department and ambulance for every minor injury. The operational plan is up, and it will include heightened security patrol and strict enforcement of anti-loitering, anti-encampment for the half-mile radius around the facility. And so I believe the operational plan will ensure that this new facility will not impact the neighborhood and the residents in that area, the same way that Kramer Lane has not impacted negatively the neighborhood in Anaheim. I believe once this facility is up and running, it will be a very critical component within the system of care that we are building out here at the Commission. And I look forward to your learning more about it and maybe giving input into what you think we could include in the operation of the Yale Street Transitional Center. The Yale Street site will be limited to the Central Spa, which is, I think, fine, because the Northern Spa with the 13 cities have done a great job in providing capacity up there. So between North and Central Spas, I think we can feel pretty reasonably good that we are on our way in terms of this system of care. And I'm very excited to let you know that. And it came, the item was approved, and the whole project really has come with not too much resistance from the residents. There was some comments, but overall, it's been well received. I think there's a recognition that there is a need to do something, that doing nothing is not an option. And I think that's, if there's nothing more that we have done in the last 2 years, changing that narrative and getting that recognition from the community is a huge first step. And then it allows us, all of us up here, to do the work that we do more effectively. So I just want to make that announcement to all of you. Susan, please.
Good morning, commissioners. I also want to echo the sentiment of our Chairman Doe. Yesterday was a very impactful day at the Board of Supervisors meeting with regards to homeless programming. The Yale site is significant for us because we want to move our program at the courtyard into a more appropriate building. It's challenging to operate within a bus terminal. We've certainly done the best we could under those circumstances to meet the needs of the crisis that we were faced with back in 2016. But we are thrilled with the board's decision yesterday to move forward on Yale, to put that into a more appropriate environment where we can have the outcomes that we seek for our system of care. Our next steps with that are to create an RFP process and go forward for a service provider to flesh out the operational plan. We did get some feedback from our community yesterday, as well as in a community forum meeting that we had not too long ago. And so we take in all of the feedback that we've received and take all of that into consideration so that we can operate the best facility possible in meeting the needs of our homeless population in the central service planning area. The other thing that occurred yesterday at the board meeting, which was under a budget request, so probably didn't seem that significant, but to me it is, and that is the consolidation of the Office of Care Coordination with the homeless services team that's currently located in OC Community Resources, and to co-locate these two offices together under the healthcare agency. And so for me, this discussion has been kind of an ongoing discussion for me starting in 2016 to being in the CEO's office, which is not an operational department. And therefore, we don't manage contracts, we don't process invoices and all the sort of administrative things that occur in operating our system of care. Also, it seems like a logical nexus for that homeless services team to be within the healthcare agency. Many of you are well aware the healthcare agency has a tremendous amount of intersection with the homeless system, from the whole person care pilot that's been significant, the behavioral health system, correctional health, all of the things that we've been talking about and all the things that we have been working on. And so I want to just take a moment to introduce three members of our team that are here today in the audience, just so that everybody has a name-to-face recognition with some of the leadership in this new division. I'll start with Shannon Legier. She's been with the county about, 4 or 5 months? Seven. It's like dog years, what can I say? But Shannon is really started in the OCCR department as housing and homelessness. And so she has a background in both mental health and homelessness. And so the nexus of her and I working together in the healthcare agency is huge. And I know many of you have worked with her over the course of the last 7 months. And she's a real pleasure to work with. Secondly, I want to introduce Paul Duncan, who is our manager of the continuum of care. Some of you may recall Jim Wheeler. He replaces Jim Wheeler in that key position in our department on running the continuum of care system, which is the HUD grant, but it's also a lot of other components related to coordinated entry, street outreach, our homeless management information system, et cetera. And so, you know, another key position. Paul comes to us from the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority. I also have some experience working with Paul in the city of Long Beach. He was working for a mental health organization there. And so really excited to have him join our team. And then finally, Jonathan Chi, who's been here how many days? 8 days. Jonathan also comes to us from the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, and his expertise is fundamentally in the operation and oversight of the emergency shelter system. And so another key hire for our department, and I look forward to working with Jonathan because he just has a tremendous amount of expertise in the oversight and operations of the emergency shelter system, which is critical at this time in our system's development. And so really tying our shelter system together and the standards of care that we are in the process of developing, he's come in and hit the ground running. So with that, I'll conclude my comments and just welcome these three members of our management team. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Susan really is the face of this effort at the county to coordinate care, but it really falls on the CEO, Frank Kim, and the directors of our departments, particularly healthcare agency with Richard Sanchez, community resources with Dylan Wright, and Deborah Bates from social services. I have to really take my hats off to them in their collaborative efforts to work together and put together the best team possible, knowing that it's ultimately the work that we do and the results that we achieve that matters. It doesn't really matter where that department is set. And as you know, sometimes it takes a little bit of the surrendering of your own kind of control and some of your own autonomy and power and for the department heads to be able to kind of work that out informally and make this as seamless as it has been, is really a testament to them, to their character as leaders. So I wanted to go ahead and put that on the record and thank them. I know I see Frank Kim and Richard Sanchez here. I don't think I see the other two. And in any case, and Susan, I also want to thank you for your input. From the time you joined the county until now, what's been 4 years? Close to three, okay. You have always brought in, you know, with you your knowledge and the people that you know, the resources that we can tap into to bring those resources to assist us here in Orange County. So really appreciate your leadership on that. Okay, the next item is number five. Madam Clerk, if you can read the item, please.
Item 5 is approved commission to end homelessness minutes from the August 12, 2019 special meeting.
Okay. Please review the minutes, and if no questions or comments, I entertain a motion. Thank you. Second? Okay. Any opposition? Item passes. Thank you. Number 6.
Item 6, approved 2020 calendar for commission to end homelessness meetings.
Okay, commissioners, so you have before you the proposed calendar or calendar with the proposed dates. The only tricky thing here is the proposed starting time is 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. I think that's pretty, sometimes can be very difficult to manage, especially on a board, on a commission this large. Welcome your comments on either the dates or the starting time. I would prefer to just have the regular 9 o'clock starting time that we have now. Yeah, okay. And as far as the dates, any heartache or, okay? Yeah. You know, we talked about that. We just built the new administration building in the Civic Center for the county. And I think we do have the capacity to seat a board or a commission this large. It has room for about 250 people, a seating area. So I think we can probably do it there. We just need the audiovisual system to be up. And so I think eventually we'll move there. I don't know who can answer that question. Well, are we looking to have the next meeting at the admin building, or?
We are working towards that. I think that's a great venue for this meeting going forward. So as with regards to the 9 to 11 time, we'll go back to the drawing board and look for a date that works for everybody here. So we'll go ahead and change the dates based on what you're saying here today. But we would like to change the venue. We just are working on the audio equipment to be able to do so.
Right. Specifically, we would like to be able to have each commissioner has access to a microphone, so that way we don't have to like kind of bounce things back and forth. And also, just a comment, can I know the room tends, you know, is like kind of shallow and wide. If we set that up, can we use one end so that we have kind of a horseshoe shape? Because I like the fact that we can look at each other and talk, when we talk. I think 17, 18 people sitting just in a line would make it very difficult for a dialogue. So it may look weird kind of like going on a long end of the room, but it makes more sense for us to be able to do our work. So that's just my two cents, yeah.
Two things. I think this room works, first of all. Mm-hmm. And parking in that area is not easy. It's under construction, and so there's the parking structure. It's hard to navigate through the construction to get to the building. It's a conference center. It's not designed for commission meetings. I think it would work, but I think this facility is working fine. I just make that. It's easier to get here, I think, for not only us, but also for the people in attendance. So I think it'd be more difficult to make that work for this venue than this current facility is working.
That's a good point. If it ain't broke, why fix it? So okay, go. That's great. Yeah. So I mean, we don't have to change. I like it. I like that. I agree with that comment. So okay, there we go. It sounds like we're taking. Let me include that as part of the vote that we'll take for this item, right? To approve the calendar, changing the starting time, and then also keeping the meeting location as part of one motion then. Okay? Perfect. Okay. Any further comments or questions? Any opposition to that idea? No. So that's it. That's the will of the commission.
Can I ask a quick question of my staff? Isn't the third Wednesday of the month from 9 to 11 also the Housing Trust Fund meeting, which would be a conflict for some of you around the table, wouldn't be able to do it on that third Wednesday because that is the same time as the Housing Trust Fund board meeting. That was what we came across as to why we actually went to the afternoon. So we're going to have to come back to you with maybe a change, Thursday or Wednesday or whatever the case may be, but still 9 to 11.
Okay.
So that we're not conflicting with the Housing Trust Fund meeting.
I still think we can just go ahead and pass it and then amend the date later.
Right.
Yeah. So that way we have at least formalized the starting time and the meeting location.
And the location, correct.
Okay. So no opposition, so item passes. Number seven,
consider request by the district attorney to have a seat on the commission to end homelessness, and we have a request for public comment.
Yes.
The public comments are District Attorney Todd Spitzer.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. It's great to see everybody, and thank you for the opportunity to speak during my 3 minutes. I want to introduce, before I make my comments, Senior Assistant District Attorney Scott Zidbeck and Assistant Head of Court Jess Rodriguez. When I was elected District Attorney and came into the office, I started to look at our collaborative courts. We have Veterans Court, we have a Homeless Court. I mean, we have a lot of judges doing great work, largely Mary Krieber, but the court, her in particular, and the bench, does support intervention for very high-risk specific populations. The district attorney's office at that time was not staffing those courts. We did not have prosecutors in those courts, even though they were facing charges brought by our DAs. So one of the things I did was we created what's called the Recidivism Reduction Unit. And the public defender has a very similar named entity. And so Mr. Rodriguez is heading that up. And what we're doing is we're showing our commitment that we're not just trying to be prosecutors in the traditional sense, but we're also trying to be part of the solution. In the last 6 months, we have been engaging in conversations with Assistant Presiding Judge Rick Larsh, and also Kim Menninger joined us. She oversees C5, which is one of the major calendar courts for trials. And many of you know today, and of course the chair knows and the sheriff knows, in his jail, in the sheriff's jail, in CJ1, there's an arraignment court inside the jail. And it really helps facilitate and minimize the transportation of inmates for purposes of their constitutional right to an arraignment. So we staff that, the defense staffs that. But their calendar on average is about 400 cases a day. So the homeless population, when they're subject to arrest, they go in that court, arraignment court, just like everybody else. And basically, that judge is responsible for trying to move as many cases as responsibly possible. So when you have somebody who has high risk, high needs, they're not getting the attention that they need in CJ1 because no one is considering properly their background, their engagement with either mental health issues or substance abuse and the like. So you get the picture. So we've been meeting for 6 months and we said we need a separate court so the public defender and the prosecutor can meet and discuss in conjunction with all the other support services we presently have in the county and are trying to build. We need to have a conversation about that person because generally they'll get, 2 days time served, right? And what's their goal? Their goal is to get out of custody as quickly as possible. Our goal should be what program, what services should we offer that person? What's the appropriate sentence so that they're, when they're in the custody of Sheriff Barnes, we can do everything we can while we have them as a captive audience and have their attention. So Judge Larsh indicated to me yesterday, and we're still working out the details, the bench has agreed to create a second court to specifically address this homeless population. That is a significant event. Now, it will be up to Judge Larsh and the Superior Court to announce all the details. I'll leave that up to them.
Mr. Spitzer, your time is up.
Oh, is it okay? I apologize. I'm not really good at speaking within 3 minutes. I never have been, and I probably never will be. That's why I usually sit on the other side of the dais. But thank you very much for your consideration. So what that will allow us to do, and we're going to work out the details. Apparently, we're going to go to C5, and we're going to be in front of Judge Menninger at this point. And again, the details to be worked out. But it will give all of us and all of our agencies a place to have a conversation. And the population we're talking about is the following. And you saw my letter in your board packet, and then I believe the clerk handed out a LA Times poll that I just wanted to reference briefly. I need to amend my letter because in conversations with the chair, his preference, and it's my preference, and I know the sheriff does the best he can with his crazy busy schedule to also be here in present, it would be me. So in the event I'm not available, that seat would be vacant. So I'm willing to agree to that. I think you can appreciate that when I had the honor of serving with Supervisor Doe and his colleagues, Supervisor Nelson and I, now my chief assistant, we were deeply engaged and involved in this issue. And we took that commitment to the district attorney's office. And honestly, I don't want to give up being part of this conversation because the prosecutorial team is a critical element as part of the discussion. And I feel that if my voice and the office's voice is not heard in conjunction with your conversations, you're potentially missing a big element that now, especially if we have a separate court where we can pay attention with great detail to this population, I think we can make a difference. I handed you out a poll, and then I'll conclude, and then we're available if you have any questions whatsoever. I don't need to tell you that the communities, the citizenry, is incredibly frustrated. They really feel like they're losing their communities. And I'm having a summit in January with the city attorneys of all the cities, both private and elected. For example, Mike Gates in Huntington Beach is elected, but most of the cities have contract city attorneys. One of the things they want is they want to be empowered by me because I have the ability to give them certain powers. They want to have enforcement powers in their city. I'm not sure that's a good thing because I don't know whether that would be consistent or inconsistent with our other public policy goals and purposes. So I would like to have a lot of indoctrination from you on that one particular issue that you all are committed to for this commission about that issue so that I can make sure whatever we decide amongst the city attorneys and prosecutorial enforcement for those jurisdictions, that we're all doing it collectively, we're all doing it lawfully, and we're all doing it to advance the reduction of recidivism and actually help the homeless. I will focus on, I think, something Chief Casella talks about a lot and probably, and I know the sheriff, and that is we have a small group. It's a finite group. It's been identified in almost every community in our county. Of the individuals who are living on the street, who are engaging in criminal activity. It needs to be addressed. And then those individuals are making it impossible for some people to bridge from living on the street to getting services, because the criminal element is interfering with a lot of the homeless's ability to break free from that and actually be receptive to services. I'm absolutely convinced that if we can focus on this population that I want to focus on in the DA's office in conjunction with the sheriff and the police chiefs and their law enforcement personnel, I think we could have a major breakthrough in this county if we could address the really, really difficult who are engaging in criminal activity. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. We will have follow-up questions, Mr. Spitzer, but go ahead and sit down because I think I need some time to tee up this item for the commission. First, we need to define for Mr. Spitzer, since this is his probably first time of participating in our meeting, to recognize that the mission of this commission is very task-oriented, right? We're very laser-focused on creating a system of care, okay? And with deliverables. When we talk about the system of care, certainly law enforcement is one component, but the minute we expand this out into the criminal justice arena, understand that we then have to also bring the defense in. We also have to have the court give input. Then that becomes a whole different, right, kind of mission altogether. And so when I received the letter from Mr. Spitzer, my first reaction was actually, wait, why would the DA be a part of the Commission to End Homelessness? Because their task is actually to prosecute people. And wouldn't that create a conflict of interest of sort? Why would people participate with a prosecutor? But then as we discussed among like the different stakeholders in terms of data integration, in terms of how do you handle cases in court, the 10% in our jail system who use up, I'm sorry, the 1,000 inmates who use up 10% of all of our jail space. Okay, how do we handle that population? Well, a lot of the decisions are made by the prosecutor's office. And so slowly I begin to see that Mr. Spitzer's office does play a role within how we handle, right, that system of care. And so I have a reassessment as far as the efficacy and the appropriateness of having the DA be a part of the commission to end homelessness. So that's why I agendize it to bring it to you to consider today. But at the same time, Mr. Spitzer, I must share with you that what you describe is a little bit too broad for my comfort level. If you are a part of this commission, I would see the role as to give input as far as the type of decisions that you would make as an office and how that could assist in us building out the system of care and leave it at that. Because that next step is something that should be part of whether it's the meeting of the Chiefs Association or, you know, there's some law enforcement body that can discuss that type of issues. Because if we bring that here to this commission, I can tell you the public defender is going to want to sit at this table. And then the court is going to want to sit at this table. And then we will then, this commission to end homelessness will turn into basically another OCC-JCC, which is our Criminal Justice Coordinating Council, right? That's what we already have now. And through that, we were able to get the integrated services model worked out, designed, part of the county financial plan. And so that's where I need us to be very clear, and I want Mr. Spitzer to know very clear that we are keeping the commission to end homelessness very distinct and this mission very well defined, which is very separate from the OCC-JCC mission. And so when you hear, the more that you bring up issues involving OCC-JCC, the more the other stakeholders gonna want to have a say in it. So that I wanted to bring that to your consideration. And now I would like to hear your thoughts. Commissioner Domer?
Yes, thank you very much. Very supportive of the DA's request to be here. I think it's critical that we have that input. You know, the reality is that we know homelessness in itself is not a crime, but there are some criminal acts committed by homeless persons. We have a big problem with that in Fullerton. One of the issues is that we see a continually revolving door. So at one encampment, you know, we will have a break-in two blocks away of a car. The person has the material at the encampment. They're arrested. They're back the next day. The residents see this. So I don't see us debating the criminal actions or anything like that, but I do would appreciate the DA's role and their ability here, especially with some of the stuff that they have with the new office within his office, the homeless court, and bringing that. I don't see really a need for the court because they're an unbiased body. They'll do their role. The advocates and the public defenders will do their role. What we're trying to look at is those folks that do have criminal tendencies or a criminal record or have been arrested, how do we react to that? And I think you're going to be very good if the DA goes beyond his 3 minutes or goes beyond the goal here to say, thank you very much, let's hone it back down. But I'd be very supportive of that office having a seat here.
I think I agree with you that we as a body can probably minimize the impact of the accusation that we are being biased and being too one-sided. But the appearance does matter. I think when people make the argument that they don't have a seat at the table, it's hard to defend against that kind of policy. If we keep the discussion limited, and I assume that's your assumption, that we keep the discussion limited, we don't go into the detail, the nitty-gritty as to how to implement the policy at the DA's office, then we can avoid, right, that type of discussion.
Absolutely, because what we're looking at is a continuum of care, and the DA's office is kind of technically part of that. So I just think it's worthwhile. We could always review membership after a year or something like that. Let's see how it is. But we are creating a system. You know, we're still very widely focused. We've gone into ad hocs to try to focus that a little bit more. I do believe there's a place for him at the table or his office.
I agree. Obviously, I agendized it. I mentioned I agree. I just want to make sure that from the beginning that we set the parameters that we don't go beyond. I think Commissioner Palmer is ringed in first, and then sure. You next.
Yeah, I'd support having the DA involved too, and specifically because it is Mr. Spitzer, and I've worked with him for dozens of years on the homeless issue, and he has a great understanding of it. But I think a lot of the challenge we've heard is like the criminalization of homelessness. I think we'd probably be the only commission in the state that has the DA involved. I think that would be very positive. The other thing is I've been invited to a lot of behind closed door meetings with different cities discussing the homeless issue and solutions. And this is one of the questions that comes up literally every time from legal counsel is, well, what do we do with those that are continuing to be bad actors in the community and things like that once we're able to shelter people? It always comes back to, you know, what does the DA think? So I think it would be a great idea to have Mr. Spitzer on this board.
Okay. Commissioner Moncrief?
Yeah, I think homeless solutions, if they're sustainable, are whole person solutions beyond just housing. And for whole person solutions, you need whole community and whole system solutions. So I would be very supportive of the DA's participation. They're an essential part of the system. So,
sure. I assume that you're ringing. Sheriff Barnes.
So thank you very much. District Attorney Spitzer, I will agree, has been actively involved and engaged in this issue prior as the chair of the Orange County Criminal Justice Coordinating Council, and I think in his office now. That council, by the way, is now chaired by Supervisor Doe. And these discussions on a broader sense, as far as the criminality goes, are oftentimes the appropriate forum in the OCC-JCC and probably not on this commission. Some of the things that were referenced about the homeless population and the criminal individuals who are part of that population, I want to be very clear when I say this. I'm not saying that every person who's homeless is committing crime and is part of that criminal element, but there are criminals who are homeless. It's the other way around, and they are bad actors, and I will agree, making it very difficult for the community and the county to parse out those who need a hand up and assistance to get them back on a good track. And the path that the criminals take through the criminal justice system and our jails and how we best service them to get them out of criminality back in a good place and set them on a different path for success. You can't treat them the same. There's a mental health population who are experiencing homelessness that have to be treated specifically for their needs. There's substance use individuals who are addicted that need to be treated specific to their needs. The economic homeless, probably not as much as it was back post-recession, but they still do exist. And reading the numbers on the children who are experiencing homelessness presents a whole different challenge for us as we start to address the issue of homelessness. Supervisor Doe shared my chief concern, which is if we bring this criminal justice-based solution onto this commission, where is the PD, where's the alternate defender, where are the other people that participate in that and those discussions? And I want to make sure and I reiterate what Supervisor Doe, I'm sorry, Chair Doe for the commission said, that this is not the forum for that discussion. We have to look at the drivers of homelessness and appropriately, we're the hub, and there's cogs that drive that, and those discussions take place as we do with the Orange County Chiefs of Police and Sheriff's Association and other elements to make sure we address those differently. As far as the court goes, as you know, District Attorney, there's been a movement to decentralize functions of the court in some regard and replicate some functions of the court in some regard. The collaborative courts, for example, Judge Mary Krieber would like to double those efforts. And I say that, and I don't want to seem like I'm opposed to it, but there's a separate issue going on currently within the county and throughout the state as a result of court security funding being deficient. I met with the Chief Justice on Monday to discuss this issue, to bring it back to the governor's office. Currently, the county is short $8 million. The public probably is unaware of that. The county subsidizes the state in the Superior Court and court security funding to the tune of $8 million. That number's gone up every year, and it's going to continue to go up until the state addresses it post AB 109. And I bring that to your attention not to say that that's not a good idea to go with the district attorney's recommendation of replicating or creating new courts or new paths for people to find success, but we have to be clear that there are costs associated with those openings of courts, doubling the collaborative courts, whatever it might be, that has an actual cost associated with it beyond staffing, judges, and others that we have to pay attention to. Put a different way, every dollar we spend one place is a dollar we cannot spend somewhere else. And unless the state is willing to subsidize or close that gap, it's very difficult for me to go to the CEO and the board and ask them to further subsidize the state's responsibilities for court security on county money, which is a difficult position to put in. I don't want to slow the process. I most definitely don't want to cripple the criminal justice system. And I absolutely do not ever want to get in the way of somebody's path to success. But those are real numbers that have to be part of the dialogue as well. And with that, if there's no more comment, I'll make the motion to add, change the bylaws to add the district attorney to the commission to end homelessness.
Thank you. Any other? I have one, just one quick comment, I ask DA Spitzer. Todd, once I decided that there's an appropriate role on the commission for the DA's office, the reason I ask that it has to be you to attend is this: you are a gifted legislator. I mean, no doubt in the Orange County, I can't think of anyone with more experience at every level than you have. Right, our careers have been kind of moving together. So I've seen all the work you have done. And so to the degree that on anybody that I share in the future with you with, I always feel like you are a positive contributor. And that's why I think it has to be you and not just your office. I hope you understand where I come from with that.
Yeah, not only, Mr. Chairman, do I understand, your admonition is very, very, very well taken. I want to make sure that the prosecutors in my office understand every single resource that's available for that particular defendant. I also want them to be compassionate and empathetic. And I want them in this context to take their hat off as traditional prosecutors and understand that we are all working together with a common vision and common goal, which means sometimes, oftentimes, especially in this arena, they have to look at this problem as problem solvers and not just part of somebody who's pushing a widget down a conveyor belt. And that's kind of what the system has been doing, pushing people down a conveyor belt. They get off at the end, and then they go back to the beginning, and they just replicate this over and over. And I just hope that we can play a little part, my office, in stopping some of that nonsense and helping people get the services that they need.
So with the admonition that given, you feel you can operate within that, within in the context of the commission?
Absolutely. Analysis.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay, so there's a motion, a second. Oh, Commissioner Wyatt.
So, and just a follow-up comment to that. So I think the appearance issue that you brought up is real and it will come up. So I would suggest that we as a commission, as we hear discussions, will need to exert, you know, real care that we take the input and evaluate it in terms of our mission to eliminate the necessity of homelessness and how that fits in. So we will have to be ever more vigilant not to become a biased commission. I mean, I think that's on us to do, and I think we can do it. But I do think that it's that you've raised the flag that we should bring up when we're having these discussions every time to make sure that we're not getting pulled in one direction and not thinking through the issue. So I think we can do that, but it's a concern, and I think we just need to keep it on our agenda. Are we being open and fair?
Thank you. And to your point, I think it's very telling that I think the three people with either law enforcement or formal prosecution experience, we both all share the same concern that you just also alluded to. So thank you. All right. So any opposition? All right. Item passes. Welcome. All right. The next item is number eight.
Number eight, presentation on homelessness within the Department of Education by Jean Ari, OCDE Coordinator Homeless Education. And we do have one request from the public to speak.
Please call the speaker at this time.
Okay, Jean? The public speaker is Sheena Innocente.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for coming to present about this important topic this morning, Jeanine. My name is Sheena Innocente, and I consider myself a poverty scholar. And I was born here in Orange County, and I experienced homelessness throughout my youth and teen years. I also experienced incarceration at the age of 14. That wasn't the end of my time with the criminal justice system. Poverty and engaging in illegal activity coincide because you're left with very little options when you're in extreme poverty. Another thing I experienced in this county while I was in poverty was sexual exploitation, because that seemed better to me than sleeping on the streets. And so I'm here to say that we are seriously undercounting homelessness by only looking at the point in time count numbers. And I'm really glad that this presentation is going to happen about the McKinney-Vento Act, because these students are largely being ignored by HUD until their families are literally on the streets or there's a CP, like DCSF intervention. There's no assistance offered to students and their families who are experiencing housing instability, poor housing conditions, overcrowding, all kinds of toxic trauma and stress. And while I was in the criminal justice system in this county, I experienced sexual trauma inside the criminal justice system. I was co-housed with male teenagers that were a lot older than me, and I had to endure experiences that I had not yet ever experienced. This made my life way harder afterwards. I really think that it's important that we do not single out people in poverty with criminal justice systems, because it, it does not serve them. I was lucky to have a wealthy family member who eventually gifted me with free housing, healthcare, and education for a little over a year, and I've now been able to get my master's degree from UCLA. Most people in extreme poverty aren't going to be so lucky to have a wealthy family member to just offer them that type of intervention, which is why they're relying on county and government officials to use all of the funding and not hoard any of it ever again on these populations. And so the National Center on Poverty and Homelessness has shifted their publishing briefs to best practices for encampments for the past years when they used to publish stuff all about housing and other topics. This is really sad, but they've had to do this because of cities and counties criminalizing homelessness and activities that you have to do in order to stay alive when you're in poverty and trying to survive without basic housing. I hope that this county will do more to address the rental housing crisis that people are experiencing in this county, because people like me are being thrown away every day in our criminal justice system because they don't have wealthy family members to step up and make sure that their life doesn't just get wasted. My potential and my human development would have been completely wasted if I had been dependent on just this county alone to help me, if it wasn't for my wealthy family member that stepped up. We've got to do more. These outcomes are still occurring for our youth today. I'm witnessing it every day. There are teenage girls being sexually exploited today because of lack of housing. So we really need to step up. And thank you again for your presentation.
Thank you. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning. Good morning, and thank you for having me this morning. I have a quick presentation, a lot of information I'm going to cover, but I definitely can go into more detail if anyone's interested afterwards. And thank you, Susan, for asking me to be here today to really talk about the issue that we are just dealing with our children that are experiencing homelessness. And again, the definition's a little different, so we're going to go over real quickly with some of the information. I'm going to talk about the legislation, the specific definition that we have for education, the school district's homeless data, the students' rights under McKinney-Vento, the school district's responsibilities, and the partnerships of coordination and collaboration, which is very important to this particular act. I wanted to talk a little bit about the 1987 is when the legislation was first passed. And the reason why this legislation was passed is because we would have students that would not be in school. When you go to school to enroll, they ask for proof of residency, and many of our families do not have that. So this was one of the reasons why the administration first came into play to have this particular law to support those families and children that didn't have any proof to show that they were there. And this law also makes sure that every single school district across the United States has a liaison that's designated to help the families and support them. We do have a list of those in Orange County on our website of those that would you like to know for our 28 school districts and our 48 charter schools. Also, we want to make sure that all removing barriers for children to get in school, that is one of the main reasons why we also have this law. McKinney-Vento was, as I mentioned, was in 1987 first initially put to place, but now under the Agri Student Succeeds Act and under Obama, we were able to have more provisions and stronger legislation to help support our students in that. What our definition is, and it's a very broad definition, and it's also a very gray definition. So when we talk about the definition specifically for our children, the main focus is that children lack a fixed, regular, adequate nighttime stay. And most people are very vague of what does that actually mean? Does living in a motel, is that fixed, regular, and adequate? And we really have to do a little investigation to really help support the family, because our goal specifically is to have the children in school and make sure there's stability for that child to be in school. So one of the key areas that we find under McKinney-Vento is the families that are doubled and tripled up due to economic hardship. And that is the majority of our children that have been identified in Orange County, and that is also throughout the whole United States. The majority of the children are vicariously living under different conditions with multiple people. So this is what, I'm not going to go over each one, but this is where we look at what does that mean, fixed, regular, and adequate, because that's really what we want to make sure that the children are identified and supported in schools. And it is the school district's responsibility to put information out to the families, but also the families are also certifying themselves of being homeless under this definition for McKinney-Vento. These are the specifically our definitions when it comes time to schools identifying students We have our doubled up and tripled up populations, and again, those are most of our families that are due to economic hardship living in maybe a rented room. They may be living in a basement. They may be living in a garage. We also have the definition of families living in motels and hotels. Some of our families have lived in motels for maybe 2 months, 2 weeks, or even 6 years. It really depends on the individual family. Shelters, again, that's self-explanatory. And unsheltered, those are our families that are literally moving around from location to location, not always knowing where they're going to be sleeping the night. And we also have a term that we're also identifying as unaccompanied minors. It used to be unaccompanied youth. We've moved to minors because it's any child that's under the age of 18, and we are finding a little bit higher number with those children being identified in these years because families are having children move out of the home in earlier than they were expected. This is our data. So when I talk about our data, what it is we have each school district, as I mentioned, has to identify children. And so I'm going to go from the bottom up. We had about 6.5%. This is our overall student population in Orange County. And if you go to last year for 18-19, there is a trend. We are having a declining enrollment, but you can also see the number, the percentage of students that have identified has gone up, even though the number of children that are in our county has gone down. This is a little bit of more information specifically. This was 2017 and 18 data that is reported from each one of our school districts sent up to the Department of Education and to the Federal Department of Education. So our families were doubled and tripled up. We found that there were 26,165, which is about 89% of those students that were identified in Orange County. You also have a infograph up front that also depicts that information as well. Then we have the motel families, which is about almost 4.8%. And then I separated from the bottom, which are these are the families that are actually under HUD definition. Our sheltered families, we had about 4.6%. Unsheltered, again, were those families that we were not sure that we were living. And this is just a one particular case in time. Those families could change throughout the year. We identify them once a year. The school districts put that in their identification system. And then we report these to the California Department of Education. And then I put the point in time count just to show you the reference of where the numbers are very similar, the point in time count versus our sheltered versus our unsheltered children and youth. Because again, we really want to thank that we were able to get our children to be part of that point in time count. Again, I want to make sure that everyone knows for enrollment is immediate enrollment. So if a family claims that they are homeless, we immediately enroll them in the school. They do not have to have proof of residency. They do not have to have the school records. They don't have to have all these particular things. But it doesn't mean they do not have to eventually get them. This is just to get them in the door because this may be a barrier why our children are not in school. So that's why these are the particular rights. We enroll them and we get these things later on to help support the families. We also have school of rights origins, and we have school of residence origins. Sometimes families think that they're in the homeless situation that they can go to any particular school that they choose. They have a right to go to two different schools. It could be school of origin, where the children used to attend before they became homeless, or it could be the school of residence where they're currently living. So they could be living in, they could have come from Fullerton and now they're living in Santa Ana. The family has a choice to stay in Fullerton at school, that'd be school of origin, or they have the right to go to Santa Ana where they're currently living. So those are our rights for attending school. Also, we have rights to be able to make sure that transportation assistance is provided for our students. Most of our school districts provide OCT bus passes for the adult and the child to get to school, but that's something that each one of the school districts will work with that family individually to see how to support them to get them to school. Also, we want to make sure that all of our children have access to all services. So these are just the menu of some of the services that our families and children may need, and we want to make sure that the children are enrolled in these programs. If a child or youth is identified as homeless, they automatically will be in our free and reduced lunch program, so that way we know that they at least will be getting a hot meal each day. Also, if we have any before or after school programs that are state funded, they also get first priority to get in those particular schools as well. And these rights are given to parents when they are identified for the children to be in school. This is just to let you know that as of 2017-18, the California has a dashboard that tells every school district and every school site how they're performing. And now they've also taken the numbers for homeless students. So we also are reporting by each school district how our homeless students are doing. Are they coming to school? Are we really looking at their chronic absenteeism, making sure that they're identified, not suspended? What are we doing? How are we helping them get to college, to career pathways? So this is, you can go to this website to view your school district to see how your students are doing in your particular school district, and specifically our homeless students as well. This is the school district's responsibility. There are many on here. The first and foremost is identifying them, referring them to service, making sure they're enrolled, giving them transportation assistance, making sure there's public notice and information out into the community as well at school sites to let parents know their educational rights, training and training for all staff, community members as well, and the school liaison should be out there in the community really getting to know the folks, really making sure that those services are brought to the schools. If a family is denied for their enrollment, there is a dispute process that we have to be part of as well. The county's part of that here, the Orange County Department of Ed, as well as the California Department of Ed. Again, I talked about the coordination and collaboration. This is the main key for all of our school district personnel, specifically our homeless liaison. They really need to be out there in the community, and that is part of my role, is really trying to advocate for our families, making sure that we have those connections, whether it be mental health issues, dental health issues, housing, anything in that nature. So the liaison is responsible for being part of that, and the liaison under the Every Child Succeeds Act is able to identify that child as well as being a HUD-certified child. So again, these are part of the responsibilities that the school district has. And these are a lot of the websites specifically. So we work with the National Center of Homeless Education, the California Department of Education, my office, Orange County Department of Education. And again, my role is to help support our school districts as well as our families and our community. So I thank you for your time. I gave you a lot of information. I could go into a lot more detail, but I will not. So I thank you for having me here. Does anyone have any particular questions?
Sheriff Barnes.
Thank you for the presentation. I have a question regarding the counts that are done. Do those counts include children who are housed at Orangewood or children who are in the foster care system?
No, they're not.
Is there any reason why they are excluded?
Foster care has a different identification system. So under McKinney-Vento, it used to be waiting foster care placement, and that has now been taken out. So there is a foster care count that the county has, but they are different numbers. Oftentimes, our children go back and forth. They will be in foster care, then they become homeless. They may go in foster care, but they are tracked differently.
This is great information. I didn't know any of this. The question that came to mind is, how does the Department of Education coordinate with, say, our system of care ad hoc? It seems like that would be a good fit, right?
I'm part of that. I really thank Susan for having me part of this, because again, this is the system flow. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we will have those families that are housed and they may not have housing shortly, but we really work very closely with the Family Solutions Collaborative as well to really see what we can do to help support those families.
Sure.
And also on the flyer that you have, the infographic on the back lists by school districts, so all the school districts have tracked numbers. So if you're ever interested in where a particular school district is with their numbers, it will show you. Magnolia School District has been one of our school districts that had anywhere from 20 to 38% of students identified in their area.
Perfect. Okay, great.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Just one further question.
Commissioner Ari, please go back to the podium.
Just a quick question. I know you mentioned that all school districts are required to have a homeless liaison. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's some obvious functions that person has, but could you elaborate a little bit on what some of the roles of that individual or what they're doing
Sure.
in each school district?
Let me go back a few slides. Particularly... on school district enroll, their role is really to make sure that the schools are identifying the students. They need to post posters in the school sites. Many of our school districts specifically, when you go to enroll your child in school, they may ask your nighttime residency. So if you're checking doubled up, if you're checking that you're living in a motel, that's self-identifying. They also are part of training their staff specifically. They are also, their role is to work with their community agencies as well, also be trained their staff particularly, meet with the parents, set up transportation assistance, just the gamut. It's going to look different for every family because they also have to make sure those students are supported. So if a student moves from one school district to the next, they need to make sure that they have their school of origin rights. So it's a very long, and if you're interested, I have a 2-page list of all of their duties because it is pretty tedious.
Great.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman? Another follow-up, and I think Mr. White has also. Real quick, so as you described, that's what the McKinney-Vento person at each school district. Is there funding connected with McKinney-Vento? We get a lot of questions sometimes by faith-based or other persons in the community saying, why don't you go to the school district? They have money to help you with sheltering and all that stuff.
Let me answer that because that's a complicated question, but yes and no. So we do have federal dollars that do trickle to California, but we have $8.8 million for the whole state. And then it's a competitive grant that every school district or county office of education can apply for that funding. It's a 3-year cycle, and that's why we are funding it. The Department of Ed is my role, as I have quarterly meetings with each one of the liaisons. As far as any extra monies, the schools can identify through their local control dollars, specifically if they want to support homeless students. They might have counselors, it might be support systems, it might be tutoring, things in that nature, but there's not a bucket of money that comes with that.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes, as part of this commission, we have some ad hoc groups, as you know, and I'm chair of the data ad hoc group looking to how we work to make our systems more useful to those experiencing homelessness or in danger of homelessness to find the resources available. I've talked to many of the functional groups on the commission about their need and how it would help them. But who within, working with the schools could we or should we interface with, because those, I'm not sure that we have thought through how to best serve those resources as part of our overall view of the broader integrated data system. So I'm just looking for some guidance in how we include the student population in when we're considering how our system might provide the access to the resources.
It may look different for each school district, but specifically we can start with the homeless liaison for the school district because that is their role to interface with their community, to be on roles in the community and to help support that. And I can also help support that with you.
So if you can provide me a list, I will seek them out.
Absolutely. I will be glad to do that handholding for you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you again.
Thank you. All right. Excellent. Excellent presentation. Thank you again, Commissioner Ari. Okay, next item is an update on the our different ad hoc committees.
Susan? And we do have one speaker request.
Okay, oh, that's right. Yes, please call the speaker at this time.
Okay, the public speaker is Dr. James Gardner.
Good morning.
Morning. My name is Jim Gardner. I'm a former mayor of Lake Forest, a clinical psychologist, former university professor and department head. This year, since leaving office, I've been focusing on mental health needs of homeless people. And to do that, I tried to get some data. So I went to the PIT counts. You have a sheet in front of you. I was going to do a PowerPoint presentation, but we couldn't do it on the fly. I'm sorry for that. So you've got my own notes that I copied for you. So I was trying to get data from your PIT reports. Why are PIT data valuable? You know that, and all the data that's been talked about here. I don't need to go over that for you. But here's the problem. As I go through your PIT report, I find out there's 1,657 adults with mental health issues, or maybe there's only 1,594, depends upon which page I'm reading. I find out that the total number of youths are 1,210 or 980, depending upon what page I'm reading. I find out that the number of transition-aged youth is 227, or maybe it's 275, depending upon which page I'm reading. You have all the documents and the pages and everything there. summary chart shows you that in some occasions, the differences between what you're telling us on this page or that page is as high as 23.5%, which is enormous considering people only have to add up the columns here. That led me to an attempt to try to actually get the raw data, because if I couldn't rely upon the county's PIT report for accurate data, maybe I could get the raw data and come up with the answers myself. Well, that was a six-month journey, very painful, with the county trying to get that data. In September, they finally told me that I had the data, and I then looked at the data that the county gave me versus the data that the county said they had, and that's the second to the last chart there at the bottom. The county should have given me 740 records. Instead, I got 1,461 records. In other words, the county has records for 1,461 people, but they're reporting on 1,740 people. It's kind of outrageous, quite frankly. Most of the time, it's missing data. Sometimes they give me more data. They say they only have X number of sheltered adults with developmentally disabilities, but in fact, I get three more records than they tell me they have. It's if I were back in college, this would get like a D to my students. It's data integration. That's really important. You've heard that here. You know that's the case. But let me go back to something that we used to talk about 30 years ago when we were first designing computer systems, and that's GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. You can integrate it as much as you want.
Dr. Gardner, your time is up.
Okay. I urge you to go ahead with your data integration, but to consider better quality assurance and having better data. Thank you.
I have a quick question for you, Doctor. Did you give our staff this your findings? I'm curious. Are you in a position, Susan, to respond to this? Have you seen this before?
No, I haven't. Okay. I would need to take a look at it and determine what it is that he's looking at. I haven't seen the PRA materials that he's received.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, in August, your staff got a copy of the report of all the data except the last graph. Okay.
Thank you.
It's been in your office since August.
Yeah. Okay. The updates, Susan.
Sure. It's my pleasure to provide an update on the county's system of care data integration project. As many of you know, we've talked about it in prior meetings. The County Board of Supervisors has authorized us to move forward with a contractor named Gardner, who's helping us to come forward with a scope of work for going out to solicitation for a software that will basically, and to the point of multiple source data systems that we have across the county and in our community that address homelessness, being able to take information from those source databases into a data integration platform so that we can better serve the people that we're trying to serve in our county that are homeless. So with that, let me, we know about the five components of the system of care. All of these will be partnering in the data integration project as we move forward. I bring forward this slide because kind of to the point and following up on Commissioner Awry's report to all of you, and I failed to put the school district's numbers in here as to where that would land. But when you look at the numbers that get talked about in homelessness, the numbers are different depending on who you talk to and the definitions and the time frames, and that can often be confusing. Okay, so Cal Optima had recently been talking about 10,000 of their members that were experiencing homelessness. And for them, it's a self-report of people that have no fixed abode over the course of a year. The Whole Person Care pilot had 7,000 unduplicated records of homeless people that had gone through the emergency medical system over the course of a year as well. No, actually, that one is 2 years. Apologize. The point in time count, 2019 point in time count, was done over a two-day period. So that's a point in time snapshot using specifically HUD's definition of homelessness. And with that, the number is 6,860 individuals and children experiencing homelessness in our county. Records from the jail, from the Sheriff's Department, 8,444 individuals that experience homelessness, report being homeless, have cycled through our jail system. And I put these wheels together on a slide because we're in the process with the data integration of determining what is the intersection of these numbers to actual people that we're sharing across our system of care and how can we better serve them. If you were to take the 29,315 number from the school district and apply that here, it would probably have some intersections as well within these systems. And so we look forward in the data integration project to be able to better align these bubbles into the right places to figure out what is that intersection across our system. So a little bit about the work that we've been doing with Gardner. There's a core group of county staff from the county council, the IT department, healthcare agency, CEO's office, looking at this kind of scope of work that we're doing with Gardner. And with that, obviously, we're looking at a seamless way for our system, for our clients, really, to be able to navigate the system. One of the issues that we hear most frequently is that it's difficult for people experiencing homelessness not only to access the system, but to navigate the system. And I would say to you that oftentimes that's difficult for providers as well without proper data systems in place. And so from my perspective, I'll say that as we look at a seamless integration of multiple databases, to the point made earlier, our source databases have to be solid as well. So junk in, junk out, we need to make sure that our source databases have the type of information that's necessary and needed for our broader system of care to better be coordinated. With that, our first cohort, and by cohort, what I mean by that is population to be targeted for resources. And there's multiple things. I'll give you a couple examples. But initially, what we're working on is, and what our direction has been from the Board of Supervisors, is high utilizers of the system of care in the county that are also experiencing homelessness that cross two or more systems. So that is our focus right now. And so when you look at the systems and the services, you know, on the top bar of services, healthcare, behavioral health, housing, public health, substance abuse, social services, and other aligned services that are addressing homelessness in our county. All of those services kind of mirror and align with the five components in our system of care. The stakeholders, obviously, we've got our county departments, but we also know that we have external stakeholders that are working side by side with us daily, from hospitals, community-based clinics, nonprofits, agencies that healthcare agency contracts with, OCCR contracts with. This is a very large network of service providers, and it doesn't represent just county departments. And so what Gardner's been able to do is meet with a lot of those stakeholders. And that has been enlightening on just the first blush of this project. And I reiterate to you, this is the beginning of a journey. And so this is basically the first 12 weeks of our implementation of a countywide system. This kind of just, I like this chart because it depicts what we're talking about. If we're looking at the whole person care pilot, that's a safety net connect program. If we're talking about the homeless system, we're talking about the HMIS system. It's currently operated by 211. We also have the CalWIN system with the Social Services Agency and a lot of public safety and corrections databases. There are a number of them that currently don't necessarily talk to each other. And I want to be clear that we're not talking about integrating these databases. That would be a heavy lift. So we're not talking about integrating those. What we're talking about is being able to pull information from those into a platform where shared people can see that to be able to better serve our clients. And so this is a depiction of that. The other thing that we've talked about, I think, in prior meetings is a multidisciplinary team. We executed an MOU across multiple departments so that we can share information on from the sheriff's departments, outreach teams, to the Blue Shirts behavioral health teams that are out working with the sheriff in South County, but also working with other law enforcement countywide, and to be able to integrate that with our HMIS system for the service component, which also includes, and bear with me, I'm using some acronyms, I may have lost a few of you, the coordinated entry system is where we do an evaluation for the most appropriate housing resource and prioritize people that have been homeless the longest in our county. And so we look forward to implementing that as a part of this data solution. And, you know, certainly the data solution will help all of us identify and better serve populations that are bouncing around our system of care without a change in outcome. So we had a data ad hoc workshop on October 4th. The data ad hoc was there, as well as a cross-section of our community. We had a lot of different folks there from the healthcare system, from law enforcement system, behavioral health, service providers. There was a lot of folks in the room just really talking about, you know, what is the common language? Do we even speak the same language when we're talking about data and information? So these were the three things that we talked about. And, you know, from my lens, I think about how each sector in our system collects different information, and the information that they collect is because they need that to do their jobs. What they're using that data for might be a little bit different than what another sector in the system is using their data for. And so we collect data differently, sometimes for the same purposes, sometimes for different purposes, and we have to kind of line all of that up. And I think that is one of the challenges that we have. On accessing data, we're talking about consent levels. We're talking about clients that come in for service in one entity and they consent for their information to be collected. And then the next point on data sharing is getting that consent and that relationship so that information can be shared on their behalf to be able to provide the best service possible for the people that we're serving. This I will not go over. It's probably super small to people in the audience, but this was one of the slides that we used in the data ad hoc presentation, looking at different components in the system of care, as I just described, from street outreach, the shelter system, the healthcare system, behavioral health, housing, special populations, when we talk about our domestic violence response system, human trafficking, veterans, youth, which we've talked about a little bit today, and then custody operations, having a seamless transition for somebody who's coming from custody to out of custody, and how can we ensure a safety net exists for them so that when they are out of custody that they don't return to custody, which would be the goal of reducing recidivism. And then probation, which many times people don't really consider probation to be a case management system, but it actually is. Probation, they do case management for the correctional system, and so they've been a partner as well in this work. And so really the goals that we've identified and that we're working towards is, and this is not just within the county, this is across the county as a jurisdiction, so, and that involves all of us, and that is to deduplicate our intake processes. We have people coming through multiple doors. If you could come in multiple doors and have the same outcome, that would be great. So that no wrong door approach, to be able to have a person not endure multiple intakes with the same information being collected. Secondly, to be able to more swiftly connect people to resources that exist. We've had some conversations about the crisis response network and being able to function in a way that we know where the resources are, what's available. For instance, an example of that is the live bed management. So a street outreach worker using a phone app, like the sheriff's department and some of our outreach teams, will be able to place a person into a bed that's available in that moment and not have to wait for any length of time to know what is available and how they can access it, and that we can access that on behalf of our clients instead of clients having to kind of figure that out on their own. So the improved navigation is certainly a goal. Providing access to, you know, housing, behavioral health, healthcare information will help us to harness the resources that we have in our system, because, you know, I think some of our system is fragmented currently, and it's not by design that it's fragmented, but it's just such a large system, we don't always know what's available, and we don't always know who else is working with this client to be able to have certainly the measured and improved outcomes that we seek, so that people are not homeless for long periods of time. That is the goal here, is to reduce the length of stay in the shelter system, to reduce recidivism, and to reduce the period of time that people are homeless in our communities. Oh, that's my last slide. So that is kind of a quick overview of the data integration project. We're coming to a close right now in our work with Gardner as the kind of consultant, and many of us that have engaged in this process have learned a tremendous amount from them on kind of what the structure of this and what's actually possible. And, you know, from my vantage point, that's been the key takeaway for me, is making all of this more manageable and making it realistic. Because in our Stepping Up initiative, we'd had lots of conversations about data integration, and it was always really challenging to think about how that would work. But through this process, I think we've all come to agree that this is realistic, this is possible, and this is actually happening in our county, to tie all of our resources together, both internal to the county systems and external with our partners. I also wanted to mention that some of the feedback I get from our partners and agencies that we contract with is that they are excited to be able to benefit from much of the information that the county has that they don't have access to. And so we look forward to being able to realize that objective. And so the timeline for us to get something up and running is fairly aggressive. We're looking at an 18-month time frame. 18-month for us, is the clock has already been ticking. So for us, that time frame is December 2020. And so we are moving at miraculous speed to get that preliminary system up and running. It starts as a nucleus, and it begins to grow out from there. If you want, I can stop there and then go over the other two, or do you want me to talk about the other two? We don't have our chairs here, so don't have too much of an update. System of Care has a meeting coming up. They've been talking about prevention as well as high utilizers, which, of course, we would need this data system to be able to identify the clientele that we're actually talking about there. And then the housing group has been looking at innovative housing financing strategies, and they have a meeting coming up in December as well. So with that, I'll open it up.
Any questions, comments? Thank you. Yes, Commissioner Bates.
I just want to point out for the board and the public, on your second slide, the point in time count was not designed to ask the question who's been homeless over a extended period of time. So as mandated by HUD, it was designed to ask the question on one particular night, which is a different question than what CalOptima and the Whole Person Care were asking, because they're asking from over extended periods of time. So just to point out the dynamic nature of homelessness, and that in the sense that there are people who experience homelessness for episodes during the course of the year, but they may not have been homeless at the time of the point in time count.
Thank you. Commissioner Wyatt.
I want to, I mean, first of all, I think the project is off and running, and I support that. It's a good thing. And secondly, the October 4th workshop, where we had the people together, maybe was by far the most positive meeting on dealing with homelessness that I've attended in the 3 years that I've been working on it, in that the people involved were looking and offering creative ideas and things that they could go off and take on to change themselves within their organization or get changed that would make it better to work through how we could provide the service. So that I took away as the maybe in the last few months, and I'd sort of wrap this up in some of my later comments, but maybe it's a good time. I got involved because in working with homelessness, because every place I turned to address the problem, I was told why we couldn't fix it, right? I mean, every excuse that I could, that you could come up with, and they all had some element of truth, but they had no offering of, but what might happen, what, how we might do something differently would give it a better result. And you know, for I would say for 2+ years, I've attended meetings and I've heard the same can't. And in the last 3-4 months, maybe I begin to hear, well, not quite that way, but if we change something this way. So the attitude in the meetings recently have been to talk, have stopped talking about why we can't do this to what it would take for us to change something that would allow us to do this. So to me, that's a huge win in the organization. So I think that's excellent. I have a couple of concerns on the project that I think is worth talking through from sort of the data ad hoc groups perspective and the broad perspective. One of the things that I will suggest broadly for us as a council is every time we look at a project, we start with the, you know, sort of the ultimate desired outcome, which is the, you know, essentially in my words, to end the necessity of homelessness in Orange County, and then put the project's role in doing that. So how does this particular project, because we're relatively project reporting in here, contribute to that role, and how do we make sure that as we move through it, that we continue to remember what the end goal and what the contribution is, and we don't, when you get head down on working on a project, sometimes you forget what you were trying to accomplish, and you accomplish the project, but not necessarily the goal. So I think this is a good forum when we get the status for us to go back to how this project will ultimately lead to the role we're after, so that we can keep that in mind. And we were talking with the DA and others about how we review things. I think those, if as long as we can always raise it to, there's an end goal here of removing the necessity of homelessness, and this effort or this project or this concern relates to that in this way, and it helps us achieve that in this way. So I would like to suggest that as we work through the projects like this, that we always sort of start off with that. I think it will help us focus better. The data ad hoc group has met since our last commission meeting, I think maybe 3 times total. And I think that other than the 2 representatives who on the data ad hoc from the Sheriff's Department, I've met one-on-one with every one of the organizations who are looking to integrate data that we've talked to look at why they want to integrate data and how they could better service and how it would help and put together that organization. I mean, ultimately, beyond the county systems, of course, there are other sheriff's departments, there are hundreds of nonprofits that serve them, and all of the resources for all of these have to integrate together to make the whole project work. So in the data ad hoc, we'd sort of set up as our first meeting, I would say, why are we having this data ad hoc, and what do we hope to accomplish out of it, and how does it fit in the bigger picture? At the time of our first meeting, Commissioner Moncrief sort of headed up the group and started off to say, you know, I think we need the Amazon model of everything that I need. I got one place to go to and I could get it. And so we spent some time sort of drilling down on how the world will work from that model to basically say that, you know, this system integrated needs to be a place that anybody experiencing homelessness or in danger of, you know, becoming homeless could quickly and accurately find resources that would help them resolve the issue that they're facing. I still think that we need to continue on that model. And the other as we worked through it, the other view of the world that came up, and especially it came up in the one-on-one meetings. And we also need to say that when anybody, an individual is trying to find something, or any of us working with an individual is trying to find and service that individual, with the individual's consent and permission, we should be able to pull up out of our system an entire profile of that individual from the services from all the various organizations, public and private, that they're working with in Orange County, so that we know that we're not duplicating services or not providing conflicting services, that if there's issues that one of the agencies said these are follow-on medical issues or mental health issues or anything else, that when we're working with them, that we're aware of them, so that we're not muddling up the situation by only having, you know, a very narrow visibility. So we set those out as comments. Now, getting these systems and this project underway is a huge piece of that puzzle, right? We need to work through that. But I would encourage us to continue to think through how we take all of the rest of the players in the homeless services in Orange County and make sure that, because some of them, I mean, we don't have ID, you know, all of these people don't have IT departments and sophisticated capabilities to integrate systems together, and they don't have databases in the same degree that some of the larger systems do. But that doesn't mean that their data and their services aren't as critical in importance. So I would encourage us to, and get feedback here, of taking and making sure that as we look at the bigger picture of having, you know, all the resources available through one portal, that we continue to work with all of the players in terms of how do we make that available. And as the Gartner project comes through and starts to solidify into an implementation, that we look at how we bridge the interface between all of the small systems and all their other pieces and this system that's being developed, so that it can look like one system to the outside world and find those resources. So that's my general feedback on what I think we should continue to do here. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay. All right, we'll move on now to public comments. How many speakers requests do we have, Madam Clerk?
We have two requests.
Okay, can you call them at this time?
Okay, the first speaker is Thomas Fielder, and after that, David Duran.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Thomas Fielder. I've been a resident of Anaheim for 35 years, and I'm a member of Housing as a Human Right Orange County. We're a group of advocates for the homeless. We work directly with people on the street. We provide food. We take them, provide transportation to appointments, to courthouses, so forth, take people to methadone clinics, all kinds of stuff, help people move, help people get stuff out of storage, put stuff into storage, and so forth. And so we're on the front lines, and we're looking to play a larger part in the efforts to address homelessness. We'd love to be given a seat at the table, so to speak, to work within the HMIS, help people identify folks and get them the help that they need more rapidly. Most people, when they're told, who can I call for help? The first answer is usually CityNet, and they have a response time of on the order of days, which obviously isn't too helpful to someone who's being constantly told by the police that they have to move, or whose cell phones are constantly running out of power. So very difficult to get a hold of these people. Once you do, you got to strike while the iron's hot. So reflecting on some of the things that have been said here today, Mr. Spitzer referred to a conveyor belt of people kind of going round and round. Maybe a better analogy is a carousel. The reason that people just go around and around in the system is because there isn't any housing. Housing is how you end homelessness. Shelters aren't housing. I note in Ms. Ari's presentation that on one of her slides that she talks about referrals to various services, and the word housing is not only bolded but also italicized. And that just illustrates my point that without housing, you're never going to solve homelessness. The good news is that the county's got plenty of money. The Board of Supervisors is sitting on roughly $1 billion in discretionary funds that they could spend on whatever they want. For example, the Housing Trust Fund could use a steady income stream that would qualify them to apply for certain grants.
Mr. Fielder, your time is up.
Yeah, so just like Mr. Spitzer, I have difficulty speaking within 3 minutes, and I wonder if I could go on for another 3 minutes like he did.
No.
So,
Mr. Fielder, you're done.
So you could supply this funding stream to the Housing Trust Fund tomorrow, and say give them the interest that you make alone on
Fielder,
that $1 billion
up.
That
I'm
you could give them
polite.
A funding stream of probably $1 million a month. Right? Just from the interest alone. You wouldn't even have to touch any of that $1 billion.
Okay.
So, this is the solution to homelessness. Housing. This is what you should be focusing on.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is how you want to be heard effectively, yes. It's how you conduct yourself. Mr. Duran.
Good morning. Dave Duran with Housing is a Human Right, Orange County, and I appreciate the opportunity, everyone's presence here today, and everybody's presentation, really, because it's really a segue to what I wanted to present to the commission, and that's almost like a drain clog. As the previous speakers, Tom mentioned, we are boots on the ground on a daily basis, and yes, there are some real clogs in the drain that aren't allowing the homeless individuals that are attempted to be helped, they're failing or they're falling out of the system because of this clog. The clog is very complicated, and it does go to, being able to contact a service provider and then having to wait days before being contacted in return. It goes to the criminalization. It goes to a number of service providers that are exiting people without just cause. I don't have time to give you the details or the history, but moving forward, my ask is, please fix the system that is here through oversight, through reporting. The residents are human beings. They should have access to report deficiencies. The public should have oversight or access to report deficiencies, because that's what's creating the clog. You can throw money at it, and it definitely needs some funding. But until this system is repaired internally, the ones that have been contracted to provide the services, until there's some oversight on their performances, you can build out a great system, great data, but you'll put people into a failing system. And I don't think that's what this commission wants. I hope not. I hope the people in this room are here for all the right reasons, and that's to save lives and end homelessness. So please consider how you're going to revamp and look at the reporting. And self-reporting is not it. We know that. So Housing is a Human Right. Again, There are many of us that are qualified to go ahead and help to provide valuable information that could help to make service providers better, the system better. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner comments? Any comment? All right, great. The next meeting is 9 a.m. Here, Wednesday, January 15, 2020. So I guess we will not see each other in December. We will not see each other before Thanksgiving or Christmas. So with that, it's kind of premature, but happy Thanksgiving and Merry Christmas to everyone. Yeah. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.